And welcome back to this week's episode of Until Green Card Do Us Part, a weekly show where we address the issues that immigration-based marriages made a few feet short of heaven create for American citizens and their families. I'm your host, John Sampson, CEO of CSI Consulting. Now, last week, Emily appeared on the show to tell us her story about the marriage fraud that she endured. And this week, she comes back and continues with her experiences with her immigration attorney who didn't do her any favors and how the I-864 has come back to pay her a visit. A bit haunting, I might add. So without any further ado, here's Emily. Welcome back, Emily. You're on.
Hello again.
Hi.
Good to be back.
So when we left off last week, we were talking about you coming back on and discussing your ideas and my ideas about how we can improve on the affidavit of support or the I-864. And so let me hear your thoughts and start off with your experience with it and what your immigration attorney told you that now you know may not be the case. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Well, my understanding was that I had a 90-day fiancé with my, thankfully now, ex-husband from Tanzania. So K-1 visa, K-3 for the two children. And my understanding was that we would have these 90 days available to figure out whether or not the relationship would work, you know, newlyweds, new to the country, would he like it or not? And my attorneys advised me that I should file for the adjustment of status, which I didn't know at the time included all the paperwork that also had the I-864 affidavit of support. But I should sign it as soon as possible because then he would be able to get work authorization sooner. And we thought, you know, rather than tacking on those 3 months and then filing at the end and then still waiting 4 or 5 months for work authorization, I was not in a position to support basically a family of four for maybe 8 months. And okay. So that was part of their recommendation and my concern. And, you know, I've told you I'm very, very liberal. I'm an independent woman. I'm a feminist. And still, it felt really weird to face the prospect of supporting my husband and his kids for 8 months. And I couldn't afford it. So my attorney said, day one, you know, I basically got married within 3 days, filed all the paperwork on the fourth day. And I would say that was my primary motivation in filing early was because I thought otherwise I could be facing nearly a year of him not being able to work.
Okay. So did your attorney tell you that you had to do all this in one shot and that you didn't?
Yes.
Okay. And Oh,
yeah, for sure.
And what did the attorney tell you once you filed all this paperwork, specifically the 864 affidavit of support, when, if at all, you could withdraw it?
I mean, we really never talked about it. We didn't even talk. They put the paper in front of me and said, you know, page after page, got to sign here, got to sign here. Here's the I-864. Just so you know, this survives divorce, but basically the U.S. government just doesn't want the immigrant to become a ward of the state. Okay, fine. Next page. Right. So we never discussed that I would be on the hook for this forever. My impression was, though, that I was locked in. I was married. I filed all the paperwork for the green card. Only if we were denied would we then start facing appeal, all that. I never thought I could actually withdraw anything. We also never discussed it.
Okay. Did your attorney ever tell you that you could actually withdraw the 864 affidavit of support?
Never.
Okay.
I had no knowledge.
What did it surprise you to learn?
Actually, we talked to prep for this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did it surprise you to learn? That according to USCIS's own rules, in a memo that was written by Michael Aitz, either in 2005 or 2006, which dealt with the final rule, the 864, that anyone who submits and files an affidavit of support, an I-864, can withdraw it at any time up to the point where the alien gets the benefit. In other words, if I remember your case correctly, he comes in as a K-1 fiancé, the kids come in as K-2s, you immediately get married, you file the paperwork, and then you went to an adjustment of status interview in April. Is that correct?
Correct. So December to April. Yep.
So you had roughly 5 months of an opportunity.
Yeah.
To withdraw that affidavit of support, and you didn't know that. And, you know, when
I had no idea.
So while you're sitting.
I had no idea. Even then, all the follow up, they're all like, nope, no way out, never any way out, never ever heard that this was an option.
Okay.
As well as this whole work authorization thing, which you eliminated me on, and I'm pretty pissed to learn. So,
okay, we're going to get to that in a moment.
Tell me about that.
we're going to get to that in a moment. But so to put a cap on it, your attorney did not tell you. Oh, by the way, up until your spouse gets his approval on his I-485, you can withdraw that 864. You could have even withdrawn it at the adjustment of status interview.
Yeah.
You could have never
mentioned a thing.
No, of course not, because they're in the business of helping aliens get in the country and stay in the country. They're not in the business of making sure that A, this is a legitimate marriage, and B, that, you know, the U.S. citizen isn't going to get thrown under the bus. So now, to make your day even more complete, you could have at the adjustment of status.
Give it to me, John.
you could have pulled back the 864 affidavit of support at the adjustment of status interview, saying, you know what, I'm having some second thoughts. I'd like to withdraw the 864 affidavit of support at this time. That doesn't mean I may not resubmit it, but I need some time to figure out whether or not this is legitimate. So I want the form or whatever I need to do in order to withdraw the 864. Now, what would have happened is, at that point, had you withdrawn the 864, USCIS would have been forced to deny your spouse's application to adjust status. And according to the current rules that haven't been changed yet, that they would have had to have issued him a notice to appear in removal proceedings. Now, what may very well have happened subsequently is, you know, let's say a month or two or three down the road, you said, you know what, on second thought, I'll go ahead and go through this again. And then you resubmit the 864, he resubmits a new I-485, and we pick up where we left off. However, and this is the however part of it, if he was in removal proceedings, USCIS could not adjudicate the I-485. The judge would have to, because once an NTA is issued, then USCIS loses jurisdiction over the I-485. Mm. But one of the things you were telling me is that you were not in a position to support your then husband and his two kids. And that the attorney was pushing you to do all this so that he could apply for an employment authorization document based on the adjustment of status.
Yes, they said it was all one fell swoop. We needed to do it all right away.
Okay.
The I-485, including everything else, was like one package, and we should do all of that right away.
Right.
Because, you know, two things, which I now know are also separate from the I-485, is filing for employment authorization and also filing for travel parole, because God forbid something happened with his family.
Right.
He'd be able to come back and forth.
Right.
But they also made it sound like for that interview with USCIS in April, 4 months later, that it was all or nothing. I couldn't even, like, do whatever you can. You can't even reschedule this. And two things were going on right then. I had the flu.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm laid out, but I got to show up, because there's no way back if we don't show up and move forward, let alone any opportunity to withdraw anything or put anything on hold so that I could, put my mind at ease. But the week before that interview was the first time he was physically threatening to me, because he said I was going to F everything up by disclosing the unauthorized work he had done, even though our attorney said It was one of these weird loopholes you can do unauthorized work. Just forever, you got to be honest and say, I did unauthorized work on every, you know, every form that asks whether or not you did. But you're not going to have your green card, contingent or otherwise, jeopardized. And I'm like, I can't commit fraud. I know that you've done this. We have to disclose it. Our attorney has advised us to do so. And so he stood over me yelling with this booming voice and telling me I was going to F everything up. And I said, but I have to do this. And I did. I did disclose it. But that was my, you know, one, that was the hugest red flag where I'm like, wow, no matter what, he wants this, even committing fraud.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I started to feel trapped then. I knew I'd filed all the documents. I couldn't get out of them. We had to go to this meeting no matter what. And I still was trying to justify, like, wow, maybe he just wants to be here that bad. But I would have loved an opportunity to take a deep breath at that moment and not feel like I had to go forward or else it was all off.
Okay. So now let me rain on your parade a little bit more. And you alluded to it a minute ago.
Yeah.
When your husband entered the United States as a K-1 non-immigrant fiancé, the day after he got here, the day after he was admitted, he could have filed an I-765 employment authorization document based solely on his being admitted as a K-1 fiancé. And that would have gone on its own. Now, here's the neat thing. The regulation for I-765s is if it's not adjudicated within 90 days, it's automatically approved. So
wow.
The result is he would have gotten it one way, shape, form, or another. And the sad part about it is that your attorney, I'm going to be gracious here. Your attorney appeared not to have been knowledgeable. I mean, the other option is they absolutely lied.
They withheld it.
Right. Yeah. Because the employment authorization document eligibility category for fiancé K-1 or K-2 non-immigrant is A06. For an adjustment of status interview, it is C9, which is a filed I-485 application for adjustment of status. So, I mean, the attorney could have said, well, we do everything all at once, when we file everything all at once. But what it did, in effect, was gave you the impression that you were locked into this and that you had no alternative and you had no time to see how things were going to work.
And none whatsoever. None whatsoever. And this is part of what, you know, this is one of my recommendations was this is too much of a burden on sponsors. And even if the relationship's healthy, you know, having your immigrant spouse sit around for 3, 5, 8 months, the worst on the outside a year, is not conducive for a healthy relationship. I'm like, this is too much to ask for a sponsor in a new family.
Right.
Right. So I'm like, that was one of my recommendations was allow people the opportunity to work from day one. I had no freaking clue. And my attorney knew this was one of my stress points was getting him authorized work.
So
they said, you got to file right away, file it all, you know, first day if you can.
So instead of
never told me I could actually have those 90 days to evaluate and he could work and reduce the stress on me and even on him, should it have been legitimate.
Right. So now we come back to the seminal issue that I've been beating this drum incessantly with. And that is that the vast majority of immigration attorneys believe that coming to this country as an immigrant is a right, not a privilege, even though the law specifically says it's a privilege. And you can find that under 8 U.S.C. 1101A20, which is the definition of lawfully admitted for permanent residence. And it says the status accorded to an alien of the privilege of residing permanently in the United States as an immigrant, such status not having changed. The word privilege is right in the definition. There is no ambiguity, no question. But, they buy into the Emma Lazarus philosophy of give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, although that poem was written in the late 1800s, and it was a compare and contrast piece between the Statue of Liberty and the Colossus of Rhodes, and hence the name of the poem, The New Colossus. So here we go. You've got this stress thrown on you, and then on top of that, you have to file an affidavit of support stating that you would be responsible financially for this guy and his kids.
Theoretically forever, and I know we're going to get into the terms, but yes. I did not know it could be theoretically forever at that time.
No, because everybody gave you this, well, you know, when he naturalizes, he works 40 qualifying quarters for Social Security, he dies, you die, or he permanently leaves the United States, or, and this is the one we're going to come into in a moment or later on, is he gets his status some other way that does not require an affidavit of support. So you're stuck.
Do you mind if I riff for a moment, though, on the immigration attorneys? I don't want to lose this opportunity.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. So, number one, who's their client? Okay. I signed the agreement. I made all the payments. And I filled out, I'd say, 99% of the paperwork. And what I came to learn is not only all, like, they didn't disclose the risk. They didn't actually walk me through any of it. So much is not even on the form. It's in case law. How bad could it be? Right? And when I told them, and I call it the big incident, the assault was in June, and I got my bearings, figured out what the heck I wanted to do in August, and I wrote to them and I said, I need a divorce ASAP. At the time, I actually wasn't, you know, it's like I didn't want him and the kids to have to go back, even though he'd assaulted me. Right. It wasn't until later where I'm like, you're suing me for what? Well, when I wrote to them, I said, I need your help. They said, oh, sorry, we can't because of a conflict of interest. I was like, what do you mean conflict of interest? Now, it took me a while because this is all super emotionally draining and traumatic. And the further down you get in the rabbit hole of the I-864, you become more and more terrified. So I had my hands full. But I later filed a bar complaint against my two immigration attorneys.
Good for you.
Because they never advised me. Yeah, thank you. I'm like, they messed with the wrong woman. I'm pissed. And I'm like, the changes need to be made, right? And I just laid everything out. I don't know what, you know, is valid or not from the eyes of, you know, attorney ethics. But my primary complaint was about that they never disclosed any of this risk. They literally just said, sign here. The government just doesn't want the immigrant to become a ward of the state. Now, it's actually actively being investigated. And from my friends who are attorneys, they're like, wow, usually you don't even go this far. And in the investigative interview, the fellow said he was picking up on two things. One was the failure to disclose all these risks to me as a client. And the second was he did not see a reason that they should have actually had a conflict of interest. Because, again, in my agreement, there's nothing about serving the immigrant as a client, nothing about conflict. I never signed a conflict waiver. And so they felt that was something that was unethical to basically say, we'll take your money, we'll help you get them in, but we won't help support you later. Now, what I learned later, and you also told me, you'll never find an immigrant attorney that will support a sponsor. So I had numerous 1-hour consultations. I stayed, took my money, spent hours, you know, hundreds for these hours. And all of them would advise me on just how draconian the I-864 was, and there was no way out, causing me to have multiple panic attacks, of course. And none of them would take me as a client because they said they couldn't do ethically anything that could cause an alien to be or potentially be deported. So I found that then in fighting this battle, I had no legal resources. And, you know, I have my family law attorney, and then thank goodness I found you, John, because there's no one out there that will support a sponsor. Blew my mind.
Well, thank you for the compliment, number one. But number two, this is something I've been beating the drum on for quite some time, which is that immigration attorneys are in the business of helping aliens enter the country and remain in the country. They're not in the business of protecting U.S. citizens. Now, I got a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
When an immigration attorney represents a U.S. citizen and a foreign-born spouse, they have what's called a Form G-28, which is a notice of appearance of attorney or accredited representative. And So they generally have both the alien and the U.S. citizen sign a G28. But my question to you is this. Just as in my practice, which is not a law practice, but it's a technical legal consulting practice, and it mirrors, as far as the billing end of it and the fee structure and everything else and the contract end of it, it mirrors what attorneys do. When you, who signed the fee agreement, you or your husband?
I signed the fee agreement.
Right. So you're the client.
Correct.
And this is where I think that investigator with the Bar Association is going. That under real law, not immigration law, or what some of us derisively call imitation law, the
yeah,
the client is the one who signs the fee agreement and who's paying the bills. Now, there are some exceptions to this, and let me give you one. If mom and dad pay the lawyer to defend Johnny from a criminal case, okay, and they sign the fee agreement and they pay the bills, there is no attorney-client privilege between the attorney and mom and dad. The attorney-client privilege rests with Johnny and the attorney, even though mom and dad are paying the bills. But in this particular situation, you've got you're being represented. It's not like the example I just gave you where the attorney is representing Johnny, but not mom and dad. In your case, the attorney is purportedly representing you through both the with the I-864, the I-129F, et cetera, and then with your spouse with the I-485 for him and the kids. But immigration law has always been one of those redheaded stepchildren in the eyes of everybody else in the legal profession. And it's because it's highly technical. It rivals the tax code, and it's constantly changing. It's in flux. It's fluid. As we, you know, we watch the news, we listen to the newscasts, and we read the papers. And immigration issues are constantly in U.S. District Court, U.S. Circuit Courts, and shortly to be in the Supreme Court. So the 864 is an onerous, draconian contract, which I believe is unconscionable and should be unenforceable if the U.S. citizen...
It's based on contract law.
Well,
basic contract law, right?
It's supposed to be. Unfortunately, there was a U.S. District Court judge in San Francisco who tossed out restatement second of contracts and told my client, I'm sorry, fraud in the inducement is not a defense for this kind of a contract. And everybody's scratching their head saying, what? And because we're back to the belief that coming to this country as an immigrant is a right and not a privilege. So what we're going to do is we're laying the groundwork for next week's episode. Okay, because this is going to be, ladies and gentlemen, a two-part episode on the 864, because there's so much ground to cover. We're not going to do it justice in a half hour. In fact, we're coming up on 24 minutes in a couple of seconds. So with that in mind, you know, the 864, you filed it, you're stuck with it. And you're hoping that he does not take it upon himself to file a civil action against you, forcing the hand and enforcement of that contract. Because when it was originally...
Which, you know, he then did. Then he did.
He did, huh? Well, hey, surprise. Yeah. So we're going to get into that in the next episode next week. And we're doing this for another reason. We want the audience to hang on and come back for next week, wanting to see part two and see how this all shakes out. But just to give the basis before we call it, the original intent was for the contract to be between the U.S. citizen and the government, which is what your attorney said. They don't want your spouse to become a ward of the state, or what we call in immigration law a public charge. Well, then a woman in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Mrs. Stump, sued her U.S. citizen husband less than 6 months into the marriage for divorce because she got her green card and she was off to the races. She wanted spousal support as well. And the courts in Indiana said, no, 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 we can't have that because the marriage wasn't of a long enough duration. So she gets an attorney and goes into U.S. District Court and sues on the affidavit of support, claiming that she's a third-party beneficiary to the contract, even though she never signed it, never negotiated it, had no idea about it at all. And that judge bought off on it and told the rest of the country, yeah, the alien is now a third-party beneficiary to the contract, and therefore they have a right in their own to sue. And there have been a multitude of lawsuits throughout the country, and I have a client now in North Carolina who's undergoing a lawsuit on the 864 himself. And we're going to get into this in the next episode on where you and I think there needs to be some changes in the rules, the regulations, and the law as it relates to the 864. So, Emily, we're going to be back next week. So I'm going to say thank you for showing up today, and we will continue this a week from today.
Sounds good. I can't wait to be back.
All right. Next week, we'll continue with Emily and what her suggestions are and what she and I have come up with on how to fix both the VAWA provisions of the immigration law and how to resolve the issue of the I-864 affidavit of support during the 2-year period of conditional permanent residence. Like last week and this week, you won't want to miss this one. But before we go, at the end of the show, here's a little something I found on YouTube that adds a little humor to an otherwise bleak and serious subject. This is the soundtrack to an Awkward Puppets episode on YouTube taking a humorous look at marriage fraud. I've put the link for the actual video on my Facebook page entitled Until Green Card Do Us Part. Please send me your comments at csiinvestigations@netecin, that's netecin.net, or log on to Facebook and go to Until Green Card Do Us Part and leave me a messenger message. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm your host, John Sampson. See you next week.
Yeah, for the most part, things have been great with us. But, I don't know, I just feel like she doesn't really understand me.
So there's an emotional disconnect.
No, I mean, she like, literally doesn't understand English.
¿Qué dice?
I see. That definitely complicates things.
I mean, at first it was exciting and a lot of fun, but now, I don't know. Language barrier is really starting to take a toll, I think.
Mania, ¿cómo te sientes?
Quiero casar con él por el green card.
¿Es tu único motivo?
Claro, por el green card.
¿Busca algo más?
Solo el green card.
¿Pero tú no lo amas?
Amo los green cards.
¿No crees que es un poco cruel engañar a alguien así?
Él tiene plata, yo no. Solo quiero una vida mejor para mí y mi familia. No importa el riesgo. Por favor, no le diga eso.
Señora, no me siento cómoda con eso.
No te aseguro que te pago el doble.
Bueno, ya me siento cómoda.
Can you guys tell me what the hell you're talking about?
Maria loves you very much and feels your frustration about the language barrier. The only real language that truly matters is the language of love.
Wow. You said all that?
¿Qué?
Yes, she did.
I guess you're right. I never really thought of it like that. I mean, they have dictionaries and Google Translate, right?
¿Qué?
As long as our love is strong, we can do this.
Exactly. Wow, es muy patético.
Los gringos son siempre así.
I feel kind of stupid, but for a moment there, I thought she was only trying to marry me for the green card.
Cuidado, está desconfiado.
Pregúntale cuando pretendes casarse.
Speaking of the marriage, Sam, is that something that's on the horizon?
I mean, I definitely thought about it. I guess I was just trying to make sure that, you know, it's happening for the right reasons. I do love her, though.
Háblales demasiado.
Ah, she loves you, too.
But on the other hand, I don't know. Part of me doesn't really believe in marriage.
¿Qué?
Like, what's the point, you know? Why complicate something that's already working? I mean, look at the divorce rate in this country.
That's fair. Tenemos problema.
¿Qué pasó?
Está dudando de la idea de matrimonio.
Carajo, cabrón. Tienes que convencerlo.
I completely understand your doubts, Sam. But as a married woman myself, I can say it made my husband and I way happier.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Decirle que el matrimonio es algo sagrado.
You see, marriage is a sacred bond, Sam.
Me debe la asociación y solidifica su compromiso.
A partnership that undeniably solidifies your commitment.
Es una prueba de estar preparado para empezar una nueva vida.
Proving that you're ready to start a new chapter together.
Me hará tan feliz.
It'll make Maria very happy. And Sam, if she's happy, you'll be happy.
Yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Wow, qué talento. Capaz que te tenga tu trabajo.
Cállate.
Well, this has been incredibly helpful, I gotta say.
So, you think you'll propose soon?
Honestly, yeah, I think I will. Don't tell her I said that, though. I want it to be a surprise, you know?
I love that. So romantic.
¿Qué dice?
Él acepta todo. Tranquila.
Qué alivio.
Oh, and one more thing.
Yes?
I speak fluent Spanish.
What? ¿Qué?
Yeah, I just pretended not to understand so I can understand how she really feels.
Are you being serious?
Yep. Also, I'm not paying for this session.
What? ¿Qué?
Ya si terminó entre nosotros. Mucha suerte en encontrar a otro gringo con mucha plata que puedes engañar. Adiós, María.
¿Conoces otro gringo con plata?